Kia ora, welcome to Mammoth's Podcast, episode 321. Today is Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. This episode is called Seasons, which is a roundabout way of talking about my main topic today, and it also flows on from what was originally the title for this episode, 10th Season. I should say it was the original title in the first three attempts that I made to record this episode, all of them in May. I don't know what, if any, significance there is to that. I said last time that this episode would be the eighth of the year, and it is. It's just that it took a very long time to get here. And it turns out that there's a reason for that, which also explains, I think, why I've had so much trouble sticking to any kind of schedule with recording this podcast, as well as blogging, even. And that, as I said, is my main topic today. But first, I did want to back up, way back, and talk about a couple of things that I mentioned last time, primarily the results of the second New Zealand flag referendum. And the gist of it is that there really, the final count, there really was no difference to speak of between that and the preliminary results that I talked about. So I don't really see any point in spending any more time talking about it. As you know, the current flag won over the alternative, and that surprised absolutely no one. At the Olympics, they did screw up and put the New Zealand flag in the wrong position for one of the medal ceremonies, and it was a medal ceremony with Australia in it as well. And apparently, recently, they were singing the New Zealand national anthem. That wasn't at the Olympics, that was somewhere else. But that, of course, is unrelated to the issue of the flag. Fiji was going to be changing its flag. Their dictator, Prime Minister, had announced that they were going to change the flag. And as a result of them winning the gold medal in rugby sevens, they decided, oh, no, we're going to keep the flag after all. So that old Union Jack flag is going to be sticking around for quite a while all over the Pacific by the look of it. And that's that. Right now, we're also in the midst of our local elections. And every 3 years, we in New Zealand elect our local government for our local area. It could be a district council, it can be a city, it can be, actually those are the two main things. And in some areas there's also a regional council, which is charged primarily with guarding the environment. That's its main purpose. And sometimes regional facilities like parks, sometimes. It depends on the area. And in our case, of course, it's Auckland Council. And Auckland Council is unlike any of the other local government designations in New Zealand because it's so massive, for one thing. It's the, I think it's the second or third largest territory, second, I think, largest territorial authority in all of Australasia, which means New Zealand and Australia. And it also has subdivisions, which are called local boards. And so those are all up for election, and it's a postal ballot that will be finalized in October. My good friend Richard Hills, who I've mentioned before, is running for re-election to the Kaipatake Local Board, which is our local board area. And he's also running for Auckland Council, because one of the people who was favored to win decided, for some reason, not to run again. And he was former mayor. He was, I think, three-term mayor of the former North Shore City, and he has been, he's a two-term councillor on the Auckland Council. But he decided not to run again, which sort of created this massive opening for the number two spot, and my friend Richard decided he might as well go for it. And of course, I fully support him, and in fact, I blogged about that. I used the term endorse, sort of tongue-in-cheek, on Facebook, and I explained why in a blog post, and I'll try to remember to put a link to the show notes in the show notes to that blog post. But none of that is really my main topic, or a topic compared to what has been going on, because the story is that last week I was in hospital. From Monday through until Thursday, I went home. And the short version of it is that I had a stent placed in one of my coronary arteries, which was 90% blocked. Now, that's really significant. It is getting to the territory where it would be quite easy to have a heart attack. And the artery in question was servicing the whole left side of my heart, which means that had it become fully blocked, it's entirely possible that any heart attack would have been fatal. And, of course, that is now not going to happen. The chain of events that led up to this, and I blogged about this in more general terms, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, but the chain of events that led up to it is that way back in February, I went to see the doctor, and I mentioned that in the podcast. It was mostly a sort of routine checkup, but I had been feeling quite tired for quite a while. And among other things, she insisted, and I agreed, that I should go on blood pressure medication, and I did. And the first month, which is all she gave me a prescription for, was kind of hard. I didn't feel well most of that time. When I went back to renew my prescription or whatever, to consult with the doctor, she was on annual leave, so I saw a locum, which is sort of like a substitute doctor brought in to help fill the caseload. And he explained to me that I was what they called a naive patient, which means that I'd never been on that class of drug before, and therefore my adjustment period could be quite long, could be like 6 to 8 weeks. So I thought, oh, that sounded plausible. And that day, I was actually feeling pretty good. So I thought, oh, well. So he gave me a 3-month renewal with one month at a time. Because normally, if you get a 3-month prescription, you get all 3 months at once. And in this case, he made it, I got 1 month at a time. The reason being that he felt that my normal doctor was going to be raising my dosage at some point. And that gave maximum flexibility because if you get drugs from the pharmacy, you can't take it back. They have to be thrown away or destroyed. So that was a perfectly reasonable thing, I thought. So I did that, and I kept on taking the same drug, same strength, and I felt terrible. I went through what I called 7 weeks of hell, which actually includes the first 4 weeks. And I felt really bad all the time. I often felt extremely tired and kind of sick-ish. And I also had what I thought was indigestion, a pain. Was a pain in my chest, basically, which I attributed to the pills giving me a sort of a reflux, acid reflux sort of a thing. It turned out not to be exactly so simple. But I didn't know that at that time. I went back to the doctor at the end of the 3 months, and I saw the doctor I was just assigned. I didn't ask for my own in particular. And he just renewed the prescription for 3 months at a higher dosage. And I had been feeling actually quite okay for a few weeks on the old dosage, even though it wasn't controlling my blood pressure yet. And when the second doctor, well, third technically, raised the dosage, I felt awful again. The same things I'd felt before, the extreme tiredness and the indigestion and all the rest of it. And it just never got better. So about 2 months in, which was about as long as I gave it with the previous drug, Nigel insisted that I go back to see the doctor and that he coached me on how to basically demand that I get what I want, that I get a different drug, because he knew that the other doctors hadn't changed the drug despite my complaints. So I did. I made an appointment with my normal doctor. I wasn't going to see, you know, whoever happened to be on duty or whatever. I wanted to see my own doctor. So I went to see her, explained my symptoms to her. She checked my abdomen, which apparently could be related somehow. And then she was suspicious, and so she had me hooked up to an ECG in the office. And she saw a pattern she didn't like in that ECG. And next thing I knew, not quite. It sounds more dramatic that way. I was in the back of an ambulance going to hospital. And I arrived at the emergency department. And in the hospital, apart from the fact there was a very cute driver, I felt like a bit of a fraud because I felt fine. I hadn't had any pains in days at least, if not even longer. And I felt good, all things considered, but tired still, but basically okay. And I thought, this is a big fuss over just a bad reaction to a prescription. So I went to the hospital. I was in the emergency department, and they hooked me up to an ECG, and they did blood tests and all those sorts of things that they do. And they didn't like what they saw. So the doctor that I saw in the emergency department said that he felt that I needed to do the cardiac stress test on a treadmill. They hook you up to an ECG and blood pressure and body blah, blah, blah. And you do this set routine on a treadmill to see how your heart responds. And he said, but the first appointment wasn't, this is on Monday, last week Monday. He said the first appointment available wasn't until the following Thursday, and he didn't want me to wait. He didn't think I could wait that long. So, oh, that's a bit serious, I'm thinking to myself. So they admitted me to hospital, and the next day, a week ago today, I had that test, and they stopped it very early on, I think in the first 3 minutes or something like that, because they saw as they increased the strength, they increased the incline and the speed of the treadmill, and they saw a pattern in the ECG that they didn't like, and so they stopped the test. And I actually felt like I could have gone on a bit longer. I didn't have any pain or discomfort apart from being winded because I'm so out of shape. But nevertheless, they did what they felt was best. And then when the cardiology team came to me, they said that I needed to have an angiogram. And they explained that that could result in them putting a stent in a coronary artery if they found a blockage of some sort. And they explain all the various risks about how it could lead to, if they knock some plaque loose, it could cause a heart attack or stroke, or I could have one of those, you know, tiny nth of a percent of people who are allergic to the dye they use. Any number of things could go wrong. But on the other hand, it could go all well. So that was supposed to be the next day. And so on Wednesday, they moved me. It must have been Tuesday night, they moved me to another ward, and then later that night they moved me back to the cardiology ward, and they hooked me up to this, it's basically like it's a heart monitor, really, but it is hooked up to this device that kind of is about the size of a very large phone, and it communicates with them wirelessly through the Wi-Fi network in the hospital, so that I could move around the ward and all that sort of stuff without having to have them come and unhook me. And I just thought it was a really cool thing. So the next day, they told me in the morning that I was going to get the angiogram about 12:30. And so I told Nigel that, and I was just biding my time and kind of waiting for the other guys in the ward, there's four in the room, to have their showers and all that, and then I was going to have mine. Then this nurse shows up at 10 a.m. and says, well, we're ready for you now. There's been an opening. Because I should say that they do 20 of these angiograms a day. They have two labs and two teams that do it. And whether or not I or somebody like me would have gotten in would depend in part on if somebody in critical condition were to come in and need that right away, we'd be bumped, you know, which is fair enough. And it worked the other way this time, which, you know, how often do you get a medical procedure and you go early? But anyway. So I was a bit panicked. I texted Nigel to tell him that I was going right then and there. So he got himself together and headed to the hospital. But I didn't see him before I went into the waiting area or in for the procedure. And I was actually really upset about that because I was thinking, you know, what if I'm one of these people who doesn't survive this procedure? He will never have had a chance to say goodbye, or he'd never see me before that happened. And I felt bad for him and all of that, more so than me. I mean, I was terrified, but I was thinking about that at the time. So they took me in, and the procedure itself was painless, as I had been told. I met a gentleman in the hospital, actually in the same room as me, who had gone through an angiogram a year or so earlier. And so he told me about it, and he said, it's not painful, and he was right. The only pain, as he said, that I felt was when they put the needle in my hand to numb my wrist. Needle in my wrist to numb it. And that was, I mean, needles are almost always painful, and that was. But it wasn't particularly, excruciating or anything. It just hurt. And so then they do that, and when it's numb, then they basically use an artery in your wrist, and they put this wire or tube or thing or whatever up your artery to your heart. They do a dye so that they can watch it through the X-ray machine on a monitor. And I didn't feel any of that, although I did occasionally feel something moving around in the upper arm and towards my armpit. And that was freaky because you don't feel things moving around inside of you usually, or at least men don't. And so they did that. They did the dye, and then a couple of times I could catch it. I could watch my heart on the monitor that they were watching when the X-ray machine wasn't right in front of my face. I could see the monitor. And that was weird too, because I knew intellectually that was my heart. I was watching, well, I could see the arteries, not the heart so much. I could see them sort of dancing around as my heart beat. And that was kind of freaky because I knew it was my heart. But by the same token, I could have been watching a video of somebody else's heart because it was on a video screen. But it was kind of weird. But that was really it. And they would ask how I was doing and stuff like that, and to tell them if there was any change in my feelings or what have you. And at one point, I started to feel these pains again. And they said, "That's okay, that's us." And what that was is that they were using a balloon. This is similar to angioplasty at this point. They were using a balloon to open the stent and extend it to widen the artery so that it was open again. And it was all over in about an hour and a half, maybe, I guess. I don't really know for sure because I didn't time it. I should have, but I didn't. And they wheeled me out, and I went right back to my room. This brief time outside of the operating room, they gave me some medicine. One of them was what they call a super aspirin, which is, it's not aspirin. It's actually just a blood thinner, but it works kind of like aspirin in that it thins the blood and so that it doesn't form clots around the stent until it has a chance to, you know, be bedded in. The cells kind of grab onto it and stuff. And I'll be on that for 6 months to a year, perhaps. And so anyway, then they wheeled me back to the room when the doors opened. Nigel was out in the waiting area waiting for me. And he came back to the room and stayed with me the afternoon. And I actually felt better as soon as I was done. Part of that, of course, and this is why I tried not to read too much into it. Part of it, of course, was the relief I felt that it was over, because it was a very stressful and traumatic sort of thing to go through. But nevertheless, I did feel better. Nigel said that I looked healthier. I suppose my color or something, or maybe I looked brighter. I don't know. But he thought I did. And so then that evening, I slept better than I have had in months, probably longer than I can remember, even though it was in a hospital and I can't rest well in a hospital. And I'd had two really crappy night sleeps the night before because of disruptions and noise and whatnot. Nevertheless, Wednesday night, I had a really good sleep. And then Thursday, they decided to release me, and they were so anxious to get the bed that they asked if I'd be willing to wait in the waiting room where Nigel had been while they were doing my paperwork and all that. I had to see the cardiologist. I had to see the pharmacist who was going to explain all the drugs I was going to be on and all that. And I also had to wait for Nigel. He had a meeting and he had to finish to come and pick me up. And I was fine with it. They gave me lunch, so, you know, that was good. And so then the next thing that happened was that I went off and sat there and waited. I'd already had a shower and started taking off the dots from the various ECGs and monitors and things they had me wired to. And there were dots all over my torso. And as I was showing, every time I removed one, I'd find another one I didn't know was there. And it was really kind of annoying in some ways. But it felt really good to have that shower because I hadn't had a chance to have one since Monday morning before I went to the doctor. And this is on Thursday morning now. And I was also annoyed because I hadn't really done much on Wednesday because I was planning on doing a lot after the doctor's office. I was going to trim my whiskers and all that sort of stuff. I looked like a cross between a hipster and a homeless person because it was all kind of shaggy and curly and stuff. And I had to live like that for the whole time I was in the hospital because I couldn't get my whiskers trimmed. I couldn't trim them there. And so I was very unhappy about that, too. It's funny the things that you not obsess about, but think about. So off I went. Went home. Nigel picked me up. We went and picked up my prescriptions right away. And then I went home on, this is Thursday. And Friday, he ended up taking half a day. I came home and we decided we'd go out for lunch. And but by then I realized I was having a bit of gout, which is no surprise considering how stressed I was in the hospital. And stress is my main trigger, that I'd have a bit of gout. And I thought, oh, well, that figures. So I didn't walk too fast or anything, but just walked a little bit. And then we went over to the doctor's office so I could pay my bill, because I had to leave in such a hurry I didn't get to pay my bill. And I also picked up my car, which had been parked behind there since that Monday, because I'd parked out on the street on Monday morning, and that becomes a clear way in the afternoon. That means that cars there can be ticketed or towed because it's so the more cars can get down the road. And so they kindly moved my car for me behind the surgery because I wasn't allowed to drive at that point. And so I came and picked it up, and I drove home. Nigel followed me the whole way, and that was basically it for Friday. And off and on, I felt okay. Some family came up for a visit on Saturday, and by Saturday night, I felt really pretty crappy again, because one of the things about having a major gout attack is that I feel like I've got the flu, that kind of thing, kind of fevery and just yucky. And so I was taking Panadol, or paracetamol, which in America is usually called acetaminophen, like Tylenol. Oh, pardon me. And so I took that, and then on Sunday I felt better, and then yesterday, Monday, I felt terrible again, and today, Tuesday, I feel pretty good. So what's happened since then, since the procedure, is that my sleep has been really good. I feel rested when I wake up in the morning, which is something that has not been the case for a very long time indeed. I would wake up in the morning, and it didn't matter if I had 6 hours or 12 hours of sleep, I felt exactly the same, and that is exhausted. And that is not true anymore. I feel rested when I wake up in the morning. Not necessarily, you know, full of vim and vigor, but then that's never been me, so that doesn't surprise me. Nigel says that my breathing at night is better now. It's good. Doesn't sound like I'm, I don't know, gasping for air, I guess. And he says my color looks good. These are all things that I couldn't possibly know. But that's what he says. And I trust what he says. And so, on the whole, things are going really well, apart from this gout thing, which is hopefully now going away. I had a little trouble adjusting to my blood pressure medication the first few days, because they started giving it to me on Tuesday, and I think Wednesday as well. I can't really remember what I had Wednesday. No, they did, but I don't know if they raised the dose on Wednesday or Thursday. One of those days they raised the dosage, and so I had to adjust to it over the next few days. And one of the side effects is a sort of lightheaded, dizzy kind of feeling, can make you feel just a bit queasy or nauseous even. But for me, it made me feel queasy. And so I had that on Friday in particular, a little less so on Saturday, less so on Sunday, nothing on Monday, and nothing so far today. So I think I've adjusted to it now. But I know that they're going to be increasing the dose again after I go to see the doctor next week, because I'll run out of those pills and they have to give me a new prescription. And so that is pretty much the story of what happened to me over the past week. And it explains why I have had so much trouble with podcasting and blogging, and even videos for that matter, because I was profoundly exhausted most of the time. There were very few times I felt really good and energetic, and even then I had to sort of, I don't know, push myself to do what I wanted to do. But most of the time, I just wasn't up to doing anything. I couldn't even go out on our front deck to sweep up the leaves, and I wanted to. There are things, so many things I wanted to do that I just wasn't physically able to do. And so for the past several months, basically most of the year, but the past several months, in past few months in particular, I wasn't able to do much of anything physical. And of course, that has consequences of its own. And so going forward, what my challenges are to eat a healthy diet, which is nothing new. I mean, I should be doing that anyway. Low in fat, saturated fat in particular, and you know, all the usual things that they say for heart health. And that's not a particular challenge for me, because I had already made a lot of adjustments over the years anyway, in the past 6 months or so anyway. So that's not a huge challenge for me. I also need to be more active. That has been a challenge for me because I was so exhausted all the time. But I am going to start with the walking once the gout is over. I'm going to start with walking, just 10 minutes a day at first. This is according to their instructions, 10 minutes a day at first, going up to 15 minutes, and then eventually half an hour a day. And, you know, then I'll be able to walk on heels and whatnot. And this is all good because with the elections coming up in about 3 weeks or so, I'll need to be fit enough to be able to help start delivering literature for my friend Richard and his team in Kaipatagi, but Richard for council. And so I want to be fit enough to be able to do that. And I will be. That's not a problem. There's no particular way of knowing. There is no way of knowing why this all came about. Some people, their bodies just produce too much cholesterol, because everyone produces cholesterol in their liver. And I could be one of those people. It could be that there were too many years of not paying attention to what was going on with my body, not worrying about fats and sugars and salt and things like that. And it could be that my blood pressure was uncontrolled for too long. All of this is speculation. There's no way of knowing for sure. And it doesn't really matter. All that matters is that we found it out in time. And the short version of the story is that I felt awful. Thanks to Nigel's prodding and coaching, I went to the doctor. I complained about how I was feeling. The doctor listened, investigated, realized there was a problem, took the next step, and I ended up getting the problem fixed. And had any one of those pieces not worked correctly, it was inevitable that I would have had a heart attack. And it's entirely possible that that heart attack would have been fatal. So it's no exaggeration to say that this incident saved my life. And the moral of the story, I think, is that everyone should listen to their bodies. They should tell their doctors if they're not feeling well and what their symptoms are. And they should follow through on the recommendations that come because of that. I'm here to tell the tale because of all of that. It all worked right. It all worked at the right time and in the right way. And I have a chance to keep going. And as I continue to recover and build my stamina and so on, I expect I probably will podcast a little more often and blog more often and whatever else I end up doing. Who knows? But the main point is that I have seasons yet to live. And that's why I called this episode Seasons. Wasn't that a nice wrap-up? Yes, I think it was. And I am going to stop here for today before I, lose my voice for one thing, because I'm not used to talking on the microphone. Thanks for listening, and I will be back sooner rather than later. Talk to you soon. Bye.
You can comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can send me an audio message through Audioboo or Skype, where my username is Amrens, and you can email me, with or without a voice message, at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. This podcast is recorded and distributed under a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.